Welcome to Soul Sessions with Creative Mind with Deborah Burnt Maldonado and Dr. Rob Maldonado of Creative Mind. Join us each week for an inspiring conversation about personal development based on Jungian philosophy, Eastern spirituality, and social neuroscience. Spend each week with us to explore deep topics in a practical way. Let's begin. Hello, welcome to another wonderful episode of Soul Sessions. I'm Deborah Barrett Maldonado. I'm here with Dr. Rob Maldonado. I'm here to share and continue our series on the wonderful concepts of Carl Jung and Jungian psychology. And before we begin, I do want to remind you, if you are listening to us on Spotify, iTunes, any of those wonderful podcast services, please subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And also, I'd like to dedicate this episode, The Divine Child, to our graduates and students and future graduates of our Jungian Life Coach training. And those of you who don't know, we do this. We actually train coaches in these methodologies, working with deeper layers of the psyche. And we do have a cohort starting in December. So if you're interested, please click on the link in the show notes to find out more about our amazing 12-month immersion of Jungian psychology and business building to create a new career as a Jungian life coach. I think this might be my favorite episode. I have a feeling.
Okay.
Because it's talking about the divine child archetype.
Yeah. And so we have the mother archetype, the father archetype, and there's got to be a kid right in there.
Yeah. Got to have make something out of this.
The divine child, it kind of rounds out the family structure. And here you see the usefulness of these deeper archetypal myths and symbols that they're really talking about our everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
They're not
something like fantasy.
Yeah, they're not just abstract ideas that are remote from our everyday lives. They inform our life and deepen our life by pointing to the deeper structures in the psyche from where these patterns arise.
Mm.
Where does the family structure come from? It's from a deeper structure in the psyche
Why do we have babies? Why do we have families? Why is the family structure the way it is? Like, how does this all work? When we think about our everyday life, we dream every night, at least 4 to 5 times a night, and these images come to us in dreams. We get so many people ask me, I had a dream that I had a baby, or I had a dream that I was pregnant, or I had a dream my best friend was pregnant, or some kind of dream. And it's not talking about, a precognitive dream where you're thinking, this is a prediction. It's more that this symbolic way we live our life, and what is the unconscious trying to tell us?
People often ask us, when are you doing the next dream course?
Yes, because it all ties everything together. You can't just read a dream dictionary. You have to understand the archetypes and the process of individuation to really get what the dream is trying to tell you. And it's not what you think on a logical level or practical level. It's so much deeper. But without further ado, the divine child archetype. Again, archetype is a universal symbolic structure deep within us that goes beyond our personal experience, that we are born with these archetypes. Mm. We were on the ocean of consciousness, and our consciousness is on the surface. These are deep, deep parts of ourselves throughout humanity. And they show up in myths. They show up in stories. They show up in our everyday journey in life.
And in movies.
And in movies, yes, definitely.
And novels, of course.
Yeah, yeah. The divine child, what does it represent?
The mother, of course, is the material world or the material universe, let's say, matter. The father is spirit, the moving creative element. And the child is purity, innocence, redemption.
Also possibility.
Possibility, mm-hmm. Potential.
Mm-hmm.
But the story of the child is so interesting. Because he or she is a hero as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're born into adversity, and they have to find a way to survive. And there's great parallel to this in our personal lives,
mm-hmm.
which we'll talk about.
And also, just physiologically, we are in this worn womb of a 98 degree body, and then we're thrust into the hospital room, which is 70 degrees. I mean, already we're shifted into this adversity of warmth and safety into this cold, separate world. And so metaphorically, we are kind of thrown into discomfort right from the first moments of life.
Yeah, so if we look at world mythology, the child, the divine child, the chosen one, there's always a prophecy or an anticipation that this child is coming into the world, as well as a hesitation, a pushback.
Accepting that?
Forces marshaling against his coming into the world because he spells the death of the old king, of the old system, of the status quo. So we see it universally in, in many, many hero stories. We see it in Horus, one of the oldest ones in Egypt, the falcon god. Horus was born from Osiris and Isis, and Osiris is killed by his brother, his jealous brother Set, and his body is dismembered. And then Isis gathers the parts enough to conceive a child from the resurrected body of Osiris, and that child is Horus. Now, Horus has to be born in secrecy because his uncle Set is still out and about and in power. And so eventually, as he grows up and gathers power, he overthrows Set and conquers.
It, for those of you who aren't familiar with the story, of like just the way you described it, how many movies have you seen with a similar theme of those middle ages, you know, where they're king and queen and the son, you have to hide because he's the son of the king and the rightful heir. And I mean, Game of Thrones is, those of you Game of Thrones fans, is all about this kind of like secret divine child that has to, you know, be hidden away.
Krishna is up against a tyrant king named Kamsa, who is against his birth, and there's a prophecy that Krishna is going to be born and, of course, rule the kingdom. So Kamsa sets about killing Krishna's mother's firstborn, right? This is a
sounds like the Bible, too. Yeah, the firstborn child in Israel, right?
So Krishna's siblings essentially were killed before he was born by Kamsa. And eventually, of course, as Krishna grows up, he overthrows Kamsa and becomes ruler. Dionysus, the Greek god of wine and rebirth, celebration, he was known as the twice born because he was born by his mother first, and then he directly grew out of Zeus, the creator god. Also grows up in peril and has to find his way back to his true place. And these are just a few, but one of my favorites is Romulus and Remus, the founders of Rome. They were abandoned by their mother because it was a prophecy that they would essentially rule the world. And so they were abandoned by the mother and were raised by a she-wolf. And of course, they eventually gained power and became rulers of Rome and founded the Roman Empire.
Also, I mean, Jesus born, Moses was born not knowing he was related, a king, and put in a basket, right, and sent and raised by the Pharaoh. So there's a lot of these myths in stories and in modern culture of this person who was meant for greatness, but they had a lot of adversity and they had to overcome that adversity to actually express that greatness in the world.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I know, just to throw in a woman, because there's all men there, Rob. Think about Khaleesi from Game of Thrones. If you watch that show, she was born, she was the heir to the throne, kept in secret, and had to kind of go through a lot of adversity to find her own power and transform.
And we see that in the story, women play central roles. I mean, look at Isis. She essentially resurrects Osiris and then conceives of the hero child. So it's not like they're forgotten in the narrative. They are a central part of the narrative. Yeah. They give rise to the divine child. We're not talking politics. We're not talking kind of gender issues. We're talking mythological, symbolic language. We know it well from the unconscious mind. The unconscious speaks its own language, and it's called symbolism, or we call it symbolism, but it is an ancient language. The closest we see are like some of the hieroglyphs, right, in ancient Mayan script and Egyptian script, where they literally would draw the little symbols and mm-hmm. read it that way. Our dreams speak in a very similar way. The mistake is that we most of the time we want to interpret them literally or kind of go by the image. But the image is a symbol, and a symbol doesn't mean what it means for us in a literal sense. Yeah. It represents a deeper meaning. So the birth of the hero, the divine child, means there's something arising within our psyche mm-hmm. that is innate, meaning it's prophesied, meaning it's predestined.
You were meant for more, right? You were meant for to live out your destiny, right?
Well, you tell me, what does it mean to you?
In each of us is the seed of potential. And many times people who've had easy lives, like we're a quote unquote easy life, if that's even a thing, but not as much struggle, not as much adversity. I find that people who undergo adversity are actually become great leaders because they kind of reach down to more of the deeper depths of despair in a way that they have to question and ask themselves those deeper answers. And they're not kind of just skimming the surface. And almost in a way that the adversity prepares them for this great destiny that they have, because it builds their muscle of resilience and power. Not that it's good that all this adversity happens, but we don't want to look at it as terrible or wrong. We want to use it for cultivating and excavating this divine child within us. And I see the divine child as this kind of like, we always talk about, you don't want to be childish, but you want to be childlike, where you're having more of an open, non-judgmental experience. You're the, you know, kind of the empty mind and the beginner's mind of creativity and being ready to play. And not like us children, we didn't take life so seriously then, and we were willing to explore and fall down and learn how to walk and all these things. And then slowly but surely, we kind of collapsed into this rigid system that the ego created to make us forget our power and kind of live externally in the world to survive.
Yeah.
And so remembering that nothing happened to that child, it's always within us, this power.
Yeah. So if we reduce that myth to our individual lives, as children, there's always a sense we were meant to be here and that there's something special that we need to be doing, mm-hmm. right? They're like, hey, we're here for a reason. Mm-hmm. But then as time goes on, the old structure or the old king starts to assert his or her power and essentially trap us into a very limited role.
Are you looking for a satisfying career as a life coach? If you are seeking a deeper path of training and growth, Creative Mind University offers an ICF-accredited life coach training program that goes beyond surface positive thinking and into a powerful process of real transformation. You can start your new career as a certified life coach trained in a unique methodology based on Jungian theory, Eastern spirituality, and social neuroscience. Get the tools to become your true self, change your life, and the lives of others. Visit creativemindlife.com, click on apply, and speak with one of our team members today to discuss your future and possibilities of becoming a certified life coach. That's creativemindlife.com.
So what is the old king? The ego. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the structure that is already there, which is society, culture, language, everything that is taught to us, constrains us from our bigger vision of ourselves, our true purpose, and channels all our energy, all our human energy in that direction, mm-hmm. the persona, mm-hmm. that we should become an ego and be content with our life of toil, of struggle, of limitation.
And I think when we think about our childlike dreams, we tend to forget them. We forget that person we used to be. Even just like trying it, like skipping, like we used to skip as kids, you know, and it was like just skipping just brings, like connects you back to that playfulness. A lot of people use art and playfulness and art or movement to like kind of tap into that part of ourselves, or going back into nature where we're kind of have that awe and that beautiful exploration of the world that we did when we were kids. Everything was, if you ever watch a newborn baby, they're looking around like, what is all this? And open and not judging anything, just like taking it all in. And that's kind of that divine child.
Yeah. Symbolically, what that divine child represents is the awakening mind. In many spiritual traditions, this is known as bodhicitta in Buddhist tradition, or as the divine intellect in some Vedic texts, or yoga in yogic texts. The yoga, the awakening, the discipline of the awakening mind is the path to overthrowing the old system of the old king, the ego, so that a new kingdom is established in the psyche. Mm. And that new kingdom, of course, is self-realization. It's the self. Mm. And so in one tradition, it is said, I must decrease so that he, the divine child, can increase.
Yeah.
Well, the gender is simply like the body, right?
Yeah.
The body that
the spirit
inhabits
can increase,
the social structure. Mm. But the spirit is neutral. It's neither male nor female.
So
it is simply like...
Like my ego decreases, so the spirit can increase.
Yeah, that's right. The self, the true self. Now, the true self is not like an individual entity. It's not the jiva, as it's called in Eastern philosophy. It is pure awareness, meaning it has no preconceived notions of gender, of individuality, of what we think of as our individual lives. It is a power that comes through consciousness. It is the realization of the true nature of your psyche and the true nature of the world. Mm-hmm. So it transcends our ego experience.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so difficult for people to comprehend, because they're trying to look at it from the perspective of their ego.
Yeah, that dualistic name and form.
Yes.
Needing to label it. Yeah. In a specific way.
Yeah. So often when we speak about the self, they want to know, what is it, right? Mm-hmm. What is the self? And it's like in Taoism, the Tao that can be named is not the Tao, because you're labeling it and you're giving it already a limited name and a limited form. Yeah. And the self is limitless. Mm-hmm. It is the kind
undefinable.
Indefinable. It is the pure consciousness in which your life and the universe arise. Mm. So it's a very different perspective that is being born in the psyche, and that must be cultivated, just like the divine child has to be cared for and protected against the forces that are arrayed against him or her. Often the mother has to flee, or the parents have to flee with the child and protect him from the slaughter of the innocents. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's not assured that everyone will get to awaken their spirituality. Mm-hmm. It's a potential, like the child is a potential, but it's not guaranteed, because there are great forces allied against him or her.
People who define themselves by their life experience, by what happened to them, and that's all they are, and feel that part is damaged or unredeemable. Even if you've done something bad, criminal, like, is unredeemable, or someone who's gone through a tragedy, it's unredeemable. What you're saying is that divine child within us is kind of unharmed by all that. And it's like that pure part of ourselves that the human being has to go through that adversity. But it's like that part, if it's not realized, you can get caught up in it. If it's realized, then you know you have that access, that you don't have to like earn it, like, or do a lot of heavy lifting to get it. It's more like peeling back the layers of who we think we are and the assumptions to get to that.
Yes and no, because if you think about it, those divine elements, we all have them. Mm-hmm. In other words, that's what the myth is saying. Mm-hmm. This is part of our inheritance, our psyche. But the birth of it has to be cultivated. It has to be cared for. And I think this myth of the divine child, that's what it's talking about, that it must be protected at first. Mm-hmm. As it's being born, right, as it comes into the world, there are elements trying to snuff it out.
So with you said the ego is the enemy, but doesn't the ego protect it in a way too?
No, it's trying to smother it.
So who's protecting it?
The intellect. The intellect, which is logos mm-hmm. and eros, mm-hmm. these deeper structures in the psyche, that they form like a bridge between our individual awareness and these older infinite elements of consciousness, which we call the self, mm-hmm. the soul, the Atman.
So there is the divine child an aspect of the soul, or is it just an archetype inside the psyche of the...
It is the awakening mind. So awakening, for example, the potential is already there, right? Mm-hmm. When you awake in the morning, you have the potential to awake and to be awake. Mm-hmm. But when you're asleep, you're caught up in your experiences and therefore
so
you're asleep.
The divine child's essence is based on whether they're awake or asleep?
Yeah, you can look at it that way. Mm-hmm. That the potential is there, but an individual will go through their life asleep, mm-hmm. like the Buddha says, you're sleepwalking until you realize the true nature of the psyche, mm-hmm. which is enlightenment, awakening.
So if you think about our last episode where we talked about Job, he was even think good things were happening to him. So that would be this kind of thing of he was asleep until he faced the adversity, and then that realization of his relationship with the divine is mm-hmm. is what was born.
Yeah, because
it's like it's like a rebirth almost of ourselves. Like
a rebirth.
We were born as a body, and then we're born as spirit.
Twice born. That's another symbolic element of the story is often that the hero has to be twice born. Born out of flesh and water, and born out of fire and spirit. So,
and then we have to cultivate and protect it so it can be reborn?
Yes. In other words, it's like a flame. In the beginning, it has to be protected, cultivated, you know, make sure it's solid enough to survive. Then it goes on to fulfill its destiny.
So you're saying that it has to protect its physical body that it's contained in. And then I'm just a little like just kind of.
Okay, let's go back to the individual.
It's okay, we can ask. I just want to clarify.
Yeah. So the individual, what happens when you start to gain higher knowledge? Mm-hmm. There's resistance.
Yeah.
Where's the resistance coming from? The ego, mm-hmm. which is the old conditioned structure.
So you're not talking about conditioning when you're a child and you're kind of growing up and there's a part of you that's protecting the divine child, are you?
Well, what is the ego? I mean,
it's a defense mechanism designed to protect the body.
Yeah. But is it external to the child as you're growing up? Is it like something that's external to you?
Well, we're conscious of ourselves, aren't we?
Yeah. So which means what? It's part of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an inherent part of you.
Yeah.
So your own mind is resisting the awakening mm-hmm. of your own mind. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? So where's the resistance coming from?
Inside.
From inside. That's right.
But what about the adversities that someone faces? Is that only when they start to awaken?
It's a symbol. Okay. Let's say the external resistance that you see in the myth is simply a symbol of
your internal conflict.
Your internal conflict that you do not want this awakening power, because it spells the end of your old identity.
Yeah, okay.
Your attachment to your identity as ego, as body, as your connection to your physical mother and your father and your siblings and your culture.
So are you saying that individuation, when we start to awaken the divine child, we have to cultivate it and care for it?
That's right.
And protect it.
That's right. That's why all the spiritual disciplines speak about discipline, mm-hmm. structure, that you have to undergo.
You can't just let it happen automatically. And
It will not happen automatically.
Yeah.
You have to wake yourself up through understanding higher knowledge, through practicing that discipline that is taught perhaps by others, but that you have to do it yourself.
So, for example, let me just clarify. In an ordinary situation, not individuation, but how it shows up in people's lives, just to bring it back into practicality. Inside of me, I had this like desire to write and do all these things that I actually did have this feeling as a child that I was here for something special. And then life kind of knocked it out of me and I forgot about that part of myself. And then when I reawoken and I started taking steps toward this part of me wouldn't stop me, like nudging me. It's like kind of the divine knocking on the door. And when I did start to examine and start doing personal growth and, you know, I kept hitting adversity because the ego's like, no, you want safety and you don't want to know this secret. And I had to cultivate and be committed to my own growth to cultivate that second birth, like reawakening that part of myself that had been kind of asleep most of my life. Mm-hmm. Would that be a way to explain it?
Okay. That's right. But why did it take you so long?
Because I'm a slow learner.
No, it's the ego.
Yeah.
The ego, remember, is a powerful, powerful force. Conditioning, I mean, one of the best, well-known and studied principles in psychology is conditioning. Mm-hmm. It's so powerful that it is known to affect every living organism on the planet. Mm-hmm. Every living thing from a cell, one cell animal to a great whale is conditioned by its environment. Mm-hmm. And it's powerfully conditioned to act that way.
So the ego, for me, it was very externalized. Like I forgot this beautiful nature I was, and I started getting very externalized. I'm chasing the external, like the ego loves to chase. I got to find a partner. I got to, you know, get a good job and I got to make more money and like build my career and get that next promotion. And you kind of forget. I stopped writing for a while. And yeah, you know, all these things I forgot that were my gifts and divine gifts because the ego is just like, yeah, as long as we can keep her distracted. And so if you're experiencing that, listening to that, like what is distracting you from cultivating that inner destiny?
Yes. And without that cultivation, without that protection that the divine child gets, meaning the seed of your divine self emerging in the psyche, without cultivation, it will not sprout. Mm. It will not grow. So often people start on the path and then give up.
They say it's too hard. Yeah.
They're losing that momentum, that power to cultivate that true self. That true self-awareness.
I think because the ego loves comfort, so the love of comfort is greater than their vision of their destiny. And so we need to have this vision or this connection to this part of ourselves. And I remember having dreams and just ignoring them. They're silly dreams. And, you know, it's this part of us is always trying to speak to us, always throwing someone in the way that says, hey, you know, you ever think about doing something different with your life? Or, hey, you know, you see someone you admire. Wow, I wish I could do something like that person. And then it tickles that little part of yourself mm-hmm. that says, hey, you know, come on, there's something more. But most of us, the ego is so powerful that it wants us to kind of stay the course versus let's do something unreasonable and adventurous and powerful. And every hero's journey, you hear the story of that person needed to stretch themselves. And many times they didn't even choose it. They were kind of thrown out of their safety by circumstance, but it's by design in a way that those things happen for us so we can kind of shake our life up. And they look at people that change and they say most people will not change on their own. Most people need something to interfere with their life or some tragedy or some setback that really knocks them down to get really finally change. We can avoid that if we start examining this work. It's not as a hard blow at midlife.
Yeah, so in the narrative of the divine child, we see the lessons. So that it means in the beginning, it's going to be very difficult for you to maintain that awareness and to cultivate it, to protect it. But you must persist. And this is where you need a guide, a teacher, a method, a coach, because if you don't have that, you're going to give up. It's very difficult. And then there's a lot of resistance from within and without, right? It's going to appear as without. But if you persist, then you become powerful enough to overthrow the old king, meaning the ego. You're able to establish a new identity based on your true self. That can only happen when you let go of your old identity as persona, ego. That is the total mythology kind of expressed in individuation. You gain knowledge. This higher knowledge is like light coming into a dark room, illuminating what is there. You become aware, you become awake, And that transforms your understanding of yourself, that you are not the persona. You're not the mask that you wear in society, the one you were taught by your culture or your parents. You're not rejecting it in the sense of saying, I got to get away from
right.
it.
I hate my old self it. Or judging your old self.
And, but you're understanding that that's not the true you. Right, it's kind of a false sense of self.
Talk about an imposter. That's really the imposter is the ego. Yeah. We often say the imposter syndrome is that you're the ego and not realizing your true nature.
That's right. The myth is kind of simple, but it's difficult to translate into a psychological model because we resist it from within as well. Mm-hmm. That we don't want to think of ourselves in that way, right? That we have to let go of something. Mm-hmm. But it's not really so much that we're letting go. It's that we're allowing this true self to emerge.
Well, it's almost like instead of letting go, we're becoming more so we could see all of ourselves and then have a better perspective than just being inside. We're standing out and seeing the dark and the light within us and able to now make a conscious choice versus being led by the conditioning of the ego. It's so such a shame, too, when people take a step forward and then they get scared. And the first challenge you have to face is your own shadow. And that's facing all the projections you have on others that are really about yourself and in reclaiming those as part of your psyche and then being able to move outside of them. And so if we're so focused on the ego level and that persona and serving that king, we will feel like basically a servant to it and a slave to the king. And when we are this, you know, powerful force within us that can override the king, and the king just hangs out and watches you do incredible things with your life. I think it's by design that it's difficult because we want to, the adversity helps us build the muscle or get the understanding that we need at the level that we want to express ourselves in the world.
That's it.
And those who bypass that process and they just go right to fame or success and they're at the top of their game in the material world and their ego's built on that false imposter, something is going to get them. I mean, the imbalance is there and eventually it'll catch up with them.
Well, it's almost a tragedy when people succeed at the ego level.
Yeah.
Because then it's very difficult for them to let go of that, right? To trust in that new life that is emerging through the symbolic self. So it's an incredible philosophy, psychology that Jung and others kind of give us, right? Joseph Campbell, of course, talks about the hero's journey. And in his books, he presents many of these myths in this psychological way, which is very interesting. And so the study of mythology, the study of dreams, of symbolism, really help us understand this, the language of the psyche, so that we can help others understand the nature of their mind instead of just kind of working on the cognitive surface level, serving the king again, the old structure. We can help them transform from within and really find that source of their spirituality.
That's how we roll at Creative Mind. And the Creative Mind Method is really designed to go deeper than that. And so really appreciate you spending time with us today. Before we go, I do want to remind you, if you are listening to us on any of the podcast services, don't forget to subscribe. We'd love to hear from you too. Make a comment below. What are you interested in? What other topics do you want us to cover? We'd love to hear from our listeners. And we hope you have an amazing day and start asking yourself, have you awakened that divine child? And if you have, congratulations, the journey has just begun. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe to Creative Mind Soul Sessions. And join us next week as we explore another deep topic where you can consciously create your life with Creative Mind Soul Sessions. See you next time.